about them Irish.
I can't take it anymore. I need a national championship.
This is the Four Horsemen Podcast.
And we are back. Notre Dame fans, welcome to the Four Horsemen Podcast. This is Dylan, joined by Steve as always. And it's been a while, been a few weeks, but here we are. Steve, how's it going with you?
Life is good. Walked 18 holes of golf today, walked 18 yesterday. Legs are on fire. But yeah, I mean, it was sunny and 70 degrees today, not a cloud in the sky down here in the great state of South Carolina. So yeah, everything is going well on my end. How about you?
Things are good. I'm home for the holidays now. Been working, but don't think I haven't seen the allegations out there that the Four Horsemen haven't been recording. I see you. And that's why we have a jam-packed, loaded episode for you today, covering everything we've missed and more. And I think it's best if we just get into it, Steve. So, as you mentioned, you're in South Carolina. What else was in South Carolina was the Clemson Tigers, and that's where we left our listener off last. Unfortunately, Notre Dame did not win that game. I will take the L on it. I had a person watching the game with me who does not usually watch the game, and that person is no longer allowed to watch Notre Dame football with me. So, sorry, guys. But we'll move on from there. Just disappointing that we couldn't score in big games, and as always, and the defense struggled a bit against Clemson. But we move on to play Wake Forest senior day. We absolutely throttle them. And then a very fitting end to Audric Estime's career, as his last touch in a Notre Dame uniform, is a touchdown against Stanford. The Irish rolled the Stanford tree, and it was the Pac-12's goodbye, the very last game on the Pac-12 network. They ran a nice little package for us, and it's sad that we've college football's come to this, but there we are. That was the season, 9-3. I'm going to be honest with you, it's a bit disappointing. I think we all know this is a team that's better than 9-3. I don't know how we lost to Clemson. I don't really know how we lost to Louisville, and I refuse to accept that we lost to Ohio State. In my mind, that's a victory. That just doesn't count. Steve, what are your thoughts on the season?
Yeah, overall, Marcus gets a B+. You know, we certainly got to hold the high standard at Notre Dame, which is a point that you made before, but technical difficulties made us have to start this recording over again. So credit to you for that point, not me. Shout out me for being humble.
Love it.
It's irritating because, you know, Notre Dame, Sam Hartman, they played unbelievable in 9 wins. Like really, really quality. Like the closest win that we had was the Duke game. Everything else was at least a 10-point win or more, including an absolute shit kicking of USC and the former Heisman winner and projected number one overall pick or top 3 pick. So yeah, I mean there were so many high points to the season. There were so many awesome things. It just felt like in the big games that we were getting bullied on the interior of the line of scrimmage. And then, you know, play calling was pretty good all year long, except when it got situational. And then when it was situational, it was really bad. And I think that, you know, that just came from a lack of experience at the position and a lack of investment at the position. You know, so happy trails to Parker and his endeavor as the head coach of Troy. And, you know, it wasn't the fairy tale here at ND, but we obviously, you know, wish him all the luck. But you know, big changes are coming to South Bend. So, you know, this year, I'll give Marcus Freeman a B+, and I'll give him a pass in that, you know, he's still in an inherited system that, you know, that he walked into, and he never really had full control of the reins of the program. know, starting next year because of players coming in, coaching staff turnover, and coaching staff coming in.
Athletic director change, as well as a university president change. I'd throw that in there as well.
Absolutely. And that has a big part to do with all this stuff. I think that, you know, next year is going to be a fortuitous one for head coach Marcus Freeman and the Irish. So, this was not as thrilling of a season at 9-3. It definitely leaves a sour taste in the mouth, but if this is our down year, is going 9-3, pretty good down year. So, you know, you take the good with the bad and just try to have a positive attitude about it. I don't know. Any closing thoughts on the season here?
Yeah, just a little disappointing. Receivers, I thought, were supposed to be better, and maybe there was reasons for that we'll get into. Just a little bit of wasted potential, but I think Marcus Freeman grew. I think with the moves we've seen since the season, there's a clear goal that Notre Dame has. I think the university has changed its position a bit. I think NIL has changed. And I think Freeman is not messing around. I think he's got 2 years under his belt. And there's no more doe-eyed, you know, inexperienced head coach. You've been the head coach of Notre Dame for 2 years, and I expect you to meet the expectations next year, which is, I think, at least a playoff bid in a 12-team playoff, because we're going to 12 next year, which means 10-2. And I think that's at the minimum, I think, what I expect from Freeman, if not more. So, yeah, it was good. I mean, I got to go to the Notre Dame game against USC, right? I tailgated. I may have blacked out just enough to forget the tailgate, but remember the game. Met a lot of great people. Stormed the field. Touched the grass, the artificial turf on the 50. My season was made right there, Steve. I'll be honest with you. We could have lost every game the rest of the year, and it didn't matter. If you're listening to this and you haven't been to Notre Dame, and I know many of you haven't, including Steve, you guys got to get there. It's special. It's magical. There's nothing like it. And that alone can kind of make a disappointing season a great one. But there's a lot to look forward to, as you said, with 2024 around the bend. Things have changed, Steve. Do you want to get into the transfers?
Yeah, certainly. And part the winds of change here, it literally just became winter 2 days ago in the technical sense. So as the seasons change, the winds change, so comes a lot of change with Notre Dame. Transfers out, some of which hurt, but transfers in. And in the new world that we're in, you know, you gotta, when the window is open, you gotta charge through that son of a gun like Audric Estime through hitting a hole. So along with that, there's been some changes to the coaching staff, and we're going to get into all that. So without further ado, Dylan, transfer portal, bring us into that convo.
What a wild roller coaster of emotions the transfer portal has been. I mean, we nearly lost an entire receiving room, starting with Chris Tyree. That one hurt. Obviously, very productive player for Notre Dame this year. Elite athlete. Wish him the best. And then more. You end up losing some of your freshmen. Rico Flores, which I don't really understand that one, because he, I think, got more touches than all the other freshman receivers.
He had the most catches at the wide receiver position on the team. The only other person that led him in receptions and targets was a tight end.
I wonder if maybe his relationship with Stuckey was good, and that was a factor, whereas some of the other receivers did not have a good relationship, such as, perchance, Braylon James, who went back to, I think he's at TCU, right?
Yep, him and not Osof Mensah.
Yeah, that's a tough loss, just because I think Braylon is so talented, and I kind of thought he had the highest ceiling of all the freshmen. But, you know, It is what it is, and we always support the players here, because as much as we support Notre Dame and we want us to win a championship, these are young men who are making decisions for them in their best interest. So, of course, I wish them the best, but the portal stung a bit. Other than that, I don't know if we lost anything significant for 2024. Like, Zeke Correll is gone, but also Ashton Craig had really stepped up, and shout out to us who, even though Ashton Craig was a 3-star when he committed to Notre Dame, we have kept beating that drum that he could be really special. And in year two, we're already seeing him take over a center spot. And then, like you said, but they're so deep on the defensive line. So I think overall it's disappointing, but when you factor in what we brought in, it's just Notre Dame is just so much better now. The roster has increased substantially in terms of quality, and I don't really know if that's debatable. What do you think of that, Steve?
Yeah. So one of our leading receivers for the year was the true freshman walk-on lacrosse player, Jordan Faison. And he's now been relegated to like fifth on the depth chart because of the transfers in. And, you know, that's a kid that's had, you know, a bunch of shimmy and shake and a lot of explosive speed. And, you know, he was kind of a spark plug for this Notre Dame offense at times. So when, you know, regardless of his recruitment or his walk-on status or all that sort of stuff, when one of your most electric and best playmakers, from the 23 season is now relegated to like fourth or fifth string for the 24 season, then you know that there's a heck of amount of really good talent that's now on the roster, which is all really good and especially deep. And I you know, everyone loves to just look at the top two or three receivers for each program, because that's obviously who's going to be on the field the most and get the lion's share of the snaps. But as we saw this year with JT, and we've seen, you know, Tobias with you know, with some injuries over the course of time.
We lost Tobias too. I forgot that one. Sorry, that's another high potential player we lost. So
He went to that in there. Cal Berkeley. But yeah, you know, Tobias, JT, you know, there's been injuries in the room, and we saw the thinner that room got, that you know, there just simply wasn't enough options for Hartman to really make as many plays. It was difficult. So now that we're going to be hopefully a bit deeper, and we can probably run six or seven receivers that are legit, really good. I think that if there's anyone that gets knocked out for a game or a couple of games, that hopefully that effect is going to be mitigated.
So before we talk about the receiver transfers we brought in, I want to talk about a point you just said there with Sam Hartman making plays, or an inability to at times. I think we all agree Sam Hartman versus the blitz versus pass rushers was different than Sam Hartman with time, right? That was a huge problem for us all year, is that any kind of pressure on Sam Hartman seemed to blow up a play. Am I wrong to say that?
It was very Jack Cohn-esque, yes.
And I love Jack Cohn, but yeah, that's, you need to protect
that guy. I love Cohn and I love Hartman, but yeah, we acknowledge the reality of it. Yep.
So Notre Dame has, I think, avoided that in their first and biggest transfer addition I want to speak about. And that is quarterback Riley Leonard from Duke. Man, what a dual threat athlete he is. We've seen it firsthand in the Notre Dame game. He has shown it throughout his career. He can make plays spontaneously. He goes off script. He can beat you with his legs. He can beat you on whatever you give him. And I think that's something we've missed at quarterback, going back to Hartman, going back to Cohn, going back to even Ian Book struggled a lot with that. I think Riley Leonard's going to provide us extended drives, extended plays, and I think that's going to be a huge difference. For those of you who aren't too familiar with Riley Leonard, this is a quarterback from Duke who has been projected to be a first-round NFL draft pick before his injury. His stats don't look particularly great from this season because, well, they were great until the Notre Dame game where he got injured, and then he kept playing with an injury until he suffered another injury that put him out for the year. But Riley Leonard was getting first-round projections as a talent. So Notre Dame brought in an absolute stud there. Big arm, dual threat in the truest sense. He can run, he can throw, he can do it all. And I think that is going to be the catalyst for the success of the 2024 season, is this kind of quarterback who is a game-changer, who will do a Trevor Lawrence or a Kyler
CJ
Murray.
CJ Stroud.
Yeah, and just... and just keep it alive. So I want to start with that one. What are your thoughts on that quarterback addition? Are you thrilled with it? Are you just okay with it? I know a lot of people think Notre Dame should just stick with the recruits and the current guys on roster and develop them. But I think that's a bit of a fallacy. I don't think just because someone isn't starting, they can't be developed. What do you think of that?
Yeah. And again, as we've seen, and with Riley himself, he not only had Howard Cross land on his ankle and get him out a couple of games this year for Duke, but he also had a toe injury, I think, against in one of his comeback games against Florida State. So, he is a guy that's going to leave the pocket. And to your point, when things do get off schedule, his upside is going to be significantly higher than an Ian Book, a Jack Cohn, or a Sam Hartman, and very clearly a Drew Pine. Sorry for that shot. That felt inappropriate. That's punching down. I'm sorry. But anyway. this is a guy that's 6'4", 215 pounds, and he's a really good runner. That really was showcased in the Clemson game, right? Even against Notre Dame, he had some plays and some moves against us. So there's a lot of upside potential for Riley Leonard. There is conversation of potential first round pick. So like it does have kind of that Daniel Jones vibe from if we're sticking in the Duke realm. Hopefully
don't,
he ends up.
Don't compare him.
Hopefully he ends up being better than Daniel Jones. I think he's a bit more of an athlete and a little bit more of a natural runner and a dual threat. So, exactly with Notre Dame, I mean, there's going to be some questions on a transitioning offensive line, but by and large, we have dudes, we have athletes, we have a really good offensive line, or at the very least a pretty damn good one. So when he's going to have time, he's going to have the weapons, the receivers and everything to make good plays. It's the off schedule stuff that is that ultimate difference maker, whether you're playing, Georgia, Alabama, Clemson, any of the big dogs. Right. So, hopefully this is kind of just that next step up of just having a dude that can make plays.
Yep. 6'4", 200 plus. That's what we're getting. And he's going to have targets to throw to. Notre Dame brought in two receiving transfers, and I don't think they're necessarily done. They might still be looking. The first one to commit was Chris Mitchell from FIU. Had a dominant productive season with FIU this year and was a highly sought-after receiver. And then Bo Collins. He's going to be the pure boundary guy from Clemson. He's coming back to get a Notre Dame degree. Notre Dame had recruited him initially. He was ranked pretty highly. ESPN and Rivals both had him as a top 100 player. So there's a lot of talent there. I don't think he's a burner, but he's 6'3", 210. And he's gonna make those DBs work a bit. And I think you need that. I think you're missing a big boundary. And, you're missing everything, a little bit at receiver. So those are two huge additions. They're going to complement Jaden Greathouse in the slot, who I think he's my boy.
That
I love Jaden Greathouse.
Yeah,
he is that dude. Jordan Faison will also be in the slot, and they could do so much with him. Jaden Thomas, I think, will be back. He suffered an injury. We didn't really get to see as much as we thought we would from him because he was supposed to be the number one receiver. So you add him to the mix, and you still got Deion Colsey, who I think is super talented.
And a big body, yeah.
KK Williams, KK Smith, another great player. And then they're bringing in a huge class that we'll get to at receiver. So I'm liking that a lot. On the defensive side of the ball, they brought in RJ Oben, edge rusher from Duke. We're the Notre Dame Fighting Blue Devils at this point. They've also added Jordan Clark, son of NFL talent. He's going to be a nickel corner for Notre Dame. Really like that pickup. And as well as special teams for P-Wagon, Mitch Jeter, kicker from South Carolina. I think he's 92% in one season or for his career. Yeah. He's got an absurdly high. Career.
And he's got a leg. He can get from distance. I think anything within 55 yards at Notre Dame Stadium, he could probably hit.
Yeah, and he looks pretty accurate. I don't see a Kyle Brunza rocket when he kicks, but I've seen him hit 50-plus with deadly accuracy. So I'm loving it. That's so far who we've brought in. I don't think we're done. I think Notre Dame might look at an offensive lineman, perhaps, although report is Charles Jagasaw has really emerged as the left tackle as a true freshman to replace Joe Alt in the bowl game. So maybe not, but they could look for another safety depending on what Xavier Watts does, another receiver possibly. So the portal isn't done, but those are the main additions. And I feel fantastic about them, that they're not just depth guys, because Notre Dame has often added depth guys to the through the portal. These are starters. These are like high quality, productive players that are going to make an impact on your team. What do you think of this, Steve? Like, I'm fired up.
Yeah, exactly. Everything that you mentioned. You know, the defensive line is getting some help with Oben. Wide receiver group, we've gone through that at length, and now we have Riley. That's going to be the one and done leader at the quarterback position, which is, it's important because it is going to be transitory, right? Because your options, let's say everyone on roster currently stays. If there is an injury to Riley, knock on all of the wood in the world, hopefully he plays every snap and is healthy. But you're going to have true junior, Steve Angeli, with one career start under his belt, which is going to be the bowl game in next Friday. You're going to have true sophomore or redshirted freshman, depending on Kenny Minchie's availability. But you know, that's Kenny Minchie, who is good, but he and he's semi-polished, but he definitely needs a little bit more experience. And then you're going to have true freshman, albeit five-star or high four-star, CJ Carr. We know he's a five-star, but he obviously he's going to Notre Dame, so naturally he has to drop in the rankings.
He's already at Notre Dame. He started already practicing with the Irish. Yeah, yeah, he looks good. We're going to talk about him more later too, but I feel good about it, Steve. I really like where we're headed for 24.
Exactly. But the main point I'm making here is you know, Leonard is going to be the leader of that QB room and just give those guys just one more year to really kind of figure it out. And whether or not Angeli stays or if he transfers, you know, then it gets thinner down to just three guys. And or if Angeli stays and we got four guys, then we're going to have three on the roster for you know, for the 25 season with a lot of experience and a lot of talent at that point. So it's the perfect gap. And I think we're just going to be, all things considered, you know, the transfers aren't going to completely dominate the playing time, other than the QB and wide receiver position, right? Like everyone else kind of seems to be like an ancillary piece that's going to complement all the homegrown talent, but also kind of amplify this team and kind of, you know, rising tide lifts all ships. So it just feels like this is the move.
I'm with you. I think Oben might be crazy good. I think he could blow up. From what I've seen, I'm with you there. Like, I think a lot of the guys are complimentary pieces, but man, RJ Oben, I think that guy could get 10 sacks this year.
Here's hoping. Yeah, absolutely. If he has a season remotely like JJB had for us, then I'd be certainly happy with that.
Well, Joe Alt said he was the toughest guy he had to play this year was RJ Oben. So I maybe he's just saying that, to Marcus Freeman, but Marcus Freeman reported that. So I take that with a lot of substance coming from Joe Alt. But speaking of Joe Alt, Steve, I think we should probably briefly mention that some Notre Dame players have decided to opt out of the bowl game to declare themselves for the draft. These people would include Joe Alt, Blake Fisher, which surprised me a bit. We can go back to that. Audric Estime, which I think is good for him. Mm-hmm. Running backs, you know, get your money while you can. Sam Hartman, and defensively Cam Williams, I believe, as well. Are there any other big ones that I'm missing out on?
Not Cam Williams. Cam, what's his?
Oh my God, sorry. Cam Hart. I got 2024 recruits on my mind. speaking of Cam Williams, that guy's gonna be a dude.
Yes.
But Cam Hart, of course. I mean, an all-time Notre Dame guy, in my opinion. From him to come in as a receiver, three-star guy, transfer positions, work his way up, suffer injuries, you know, be tempted probably with the NFL at some point, and decided to stay with Notre Dame. I love what that guy's provided. He had a great last season. But
absolutely.
Yeah. And the other guys to mention to that list?
None that I can think of at the moment. I don't know. But in the same breath of Cam Hart,
Marist.
Also.
Marist Leofau. It's another one.
Yeah, he's also out. But in the same breath as Cam Hart, you know, same, very similar journey or path was Xavier Watts. Just unrelated from the bowl game or his future, just his season in general. A quick note of congratulations for him winning the Bednarik Award. because man, oh man, did he have an incredible season. And again, a wide receiver from Nebraska, came to Notre Dame, switched positions, had some injury issues, was on the bench for a while, took a long time to develop. This is his fourth year on campus. I think he's a redshirted junior, a senior in the classroom, and he has one more year of eligibility left just because of COVID. So he can come back if he wants to. Whether or not he does, that's his business, and we obviously wish him the best. But just a quick note of appreciation for Xavier Watts in that conversation.
Yeah, great points there. Well, speaking of Xavier Watts, I think we should also mention players who've decided to return. Now, Xavier Watts hasn't made an announcement yet, and we're really hoping he comes back. But Notre Dame has gotten better for 2024 in ways that just people decided to stay. You know what I mean? Gabriel Rubio, for one. Howard Cross, another. There are some returning talent that Notre Dame's got coming for them that I love. And then I'm hoping, you know, the 2023 Bronco Nagurski Trophy winner for best defensive player, Xavier Watts, Caleb Williams' nightmare. I hope he comes back because,
did I say the Bednarik and is it the Nagurski? My bad.
You did, but I didn't want to correct you, so I thought I would just pretend I didn't hear you say the wrong word. but all good, Steve. I definitely know what you mean. Love it. This team's going to be so loaded coming back next year, and I don't know what more there is to say other than, you know, cross your fingers on Xavier Watts. But man, how Howard Cross coming back is huge. Jack Kaiser coming back is huge. This is going to be something. This is going to be, I think, a really loaded team for 24.
Here's hoping. And speaking of 24, let's transition now into the 2024 recruiting class. Now, me and Dylan, traditionally, you know, P-Wagon doesn't care about recruiting, which is insane to me. But I got to be honest with you, recruiting is something I used to love following. It has lost a bit of its luster just with the transfer portal. Everything kind of seems a little bit more mercenary for hire-ish these days. So I'm not going to allow myself to get like overly excited about guys and be too connected to them anymore, just because the nature of, you know, the transition period we're in with NIL, and maybe there's some sort of regulation that comes in down the pike, and we can talk about that in another episode in the off season coming up. But yeah, basically, we're not going to go through position by position and give you guys the whole breakdown of the class. You just go to 247sports.com, look for yourself and whatnot. But at the very least, what me and Dylan are going to do, we're going to highlight a handful of guys. I think we're going to do three each of just some of the top signees of the class. These are the difference makers, and these are some guys that, if they stay on campus throughout their entire college football tenure, if they are Irish for their entirety, they're going to ultimately be the reason why we're going to be playoff contenders forever, just because of the 12 team thing. But it's how deep we can go into the playoffs and hopefully compete for a title. These guys are going to be responsible for it. So Dylan, I'll let you have the first pick here of which player that you want to highlight for the 24 class.
Man, you got to go with the quarterback. It's the most important position in all of sports, and boy, do we have a good one. C.J. Carr, of course, from the famous Carr Michigan family, meaning Michigan Wolverines, is a Notre Dame man, and I couldn't be happier. He seems like such a great guy, loves Notre Dame, is a total Notre Dame guy himself, and is a super elite talent. You look at rankings here. Three of the four major services have him ranked in the top 50. All of them have him ranked, of those three, they all have him ranked within the top five as quarterbacks. He is a very crisp, accurate passer of the ball. He is athletic enough to be mobile without being necessarily a dual threat guy that you're going to base a run game around. But he can move around. He's super intelligent. Just a great kid. I'm cheering for him so hard. I think he is the future of this program. And I think he's the first one that deserves some spotlight there, because he's got some pretty big weights on his shoulders as the Notre Dame quarterback in this class, and I think he'll live up to it.
Yeah, I mean, quite literally the son, or I guess in this case, grandson of a coach. So you know that between the ears, which is the most important aspect of the quarterback position, he's going to be very fundamentally sound. Now, who he's going to be throwing to is going to be extremely important. And this is a five-star wide receiver from the Chicagoland area, Cam Williams, 6'2", 190 pounds. Pick a position on the field at, you know, for wide receiver, and you know, whether it's in the slot, on the field, or the boundary, and this guy could probably play it and probably and just dominate. His high school tape is super impressive. He's an incredible wide receiver. This is that type of dude. When you think of, like, you know, the Alabama wide receivers over the last couple of years with Devonta Smith and John Mechie and all that sort of stuff, that's what you need to ultimately compete at the top level of the college football playoff. That's what's going to make deep runs. And Cam Williams is that guy. So don't be surprised if you're going to see him making receptions this upcoming year as a true freshman, if not 25 and onward. I mean, Cam Williams, please stay at Notre Dame. I'd love to see you play here for the entirety of your college football career and just dominate. And then we'll see you on Sundays. Dylan, who's your next highlight?
Well, in theme of building from the quarterback outwards, let's start protecting the quarterback. I got to go with my boy from your neck of the woods, or at least used to be, West Roxbury, Massachusetts, offensive tackle, Gerby Lambert, unanimously ranked within the top 100 by all services. He's a five-star, he's in the top 32 at least for on three. Charles Jagasaw last year was right up there. But I don't know if I recall a offensive line recruiter of high school that is so dominant like Gerby is. This guy is listed at 6'6", 290. He might even be taller than that. He's going to play either tackle for Notre Dame, and he's a pure tackle. And I think that's something Notre Dame needed. Notre Dame's gotten a lot of, I think, tackle guards and guys who might project better as guards at Notre Dame. This is a pure tackle, and I love it. I think he could start as a true freshman. I mean, if Blake Fisher could, I think Gerby Lambert could. Left tackle, right tackle, doesn't matter. Get me that guy. He's going to be a dominant offensive lineman and just one of the many in a long lineage of Notre Dame offensive linemen in the NFL.
Absolutely. And in practice, who is he going to be going up against in the trenches is going to be Bryce Young. High four-star, 6'5", 250-ish pounds, and he certainly has the frame to probably go up to 300 pretty easily if he wants to. He is the son of Notre Dame great Bryant Young. He started pretty, you know, kind of middle of the pack in regards to the rankings, and then over the course of his senior season, he really shot up, and now he's like, he's ranked 107th nationally for 247 on the composite. So that's across, you know, all the different kind of recruiting sites. So top 150 guy, he's really, really good and is going to be hopefully plugging up that defensive line and really making plays for us going forward.
Well said. Well, let's continue with the defense here. I got to go with one of my favorite signings, Kingston Viaumu-Asa, John Bosco, linebacker out of California. When's the last time we signed one of those kids? Huge football production factory over there. Notre Dame needs to do better in that area, and Kingston is their guy. They beat out, this was such a huge recruiting win because Notre Dame beat out Ohio State and USC for him. That was a major statement from the Marcus Freeman staff, and he's a player that's got everything you want. Right, not only is he an elite athlete who is going to quarterback your defense, he's also a great young man. You could tell in the videos we've seen that have come out lately about him, you know, his senior speech at St. John Bosco that came out recently. This is just a Notre Dame man, and I love that we're going to have him added to a linebacker group that features Drake Bowen, Jaden Osbury, Jalen Sneed. Like, are you kidding me? This is going to be an absolutely ridiculous front seven. And Kingston's going to be the guy that leads that. So I love where this defense is headed, and I love with the addition of Kingston Viaumu-Asa.
Yeah, and with his recruitment and his commitment to Notre Dame and everything and the way it all played out, it had this taste in the back of your tongue that almost it was so eerily similar to the Manti Te'o recruitment and commitment to Notre Dame. And if he has even half of what Manti had as a career at Notre Dame, then we got a very special one. So very excited for KVA in his time in South Bend and who he'll be tackling in practice. Yeah.
Attempting is a good word.
Exactly, because it's if you liked Audric Estime, then you're going to absolutely love Kedren Young. 5'10", 220-pound absolute workhorse coming out of Texas. Again, a high 4-star running back. Basically, he's a freight train on wheels, very much so, just like an Audric Estime, except just a little bit more athletic and a little bit faster. So he's slightly smaller comparatively, but
bigger boy. He's got a frame on him.
Oh, he certainly does, and he's absolutely yoked out of his mind. So. He's going to be special just because he certainly has the ability to just run guys over. And also, it's almost like Barry Sanders-esque when you watch his tape of in tight spaces, just like somehow pivoting and hitting the tightest holes in order to open up a ton of space. So seems like he has really good ball carrier vision. Like I said, if you liked Audric Estime, you're going to love Kedren Young. And really excited.
He's going to see the field as a freshman. He'll find his way onto the field, I think.
Maybe. We have such a deep running back position that you question it, but I honestly wouldn't be surprised because he's a freak athlete, man.
Our running back room is going to be so loaded with Jeremiah Love, Jadarian Price, Kedren Young, Jabron Payne. Like, what a joke. What a joke of talent we have. Like, it's just an embarrassment of running back riches. And I love it because Dylan McCullough deserves it because he's the best. I love that guy. Steve, there's so many guys we could talk about here. This is such a great class. There's so many highly ranked guys we didn't even get to. Not that rankings mean everything. And I think that gives us an opportunity for you and I to pick what we've been doing every year, a pet cat. This is a guy that we like, that just personally, he might not be the most ranked, highest ranked guy, but it's somebody that you're rooting for, that you got, you're in his corner. We all got them. Who's yours for the 2024 class?
I'm going with Logan Saldate, or Saldate. I don't know how to say that. I threw a little bit of English on it then, a little Saldate.
I think Saldate might have been right. That's how I would say it. Sounds better.
Yeah. He's from Salinas, California, wide receiver, 5'11", 185. He's quick. He can obviously just body frame is going to probably push him towards the slot, but he can play outside if he certainly needs to. And he's going to be a project. We probably won't see him for 2 years. But again, you just never know. I didn't think that we would see Rico Flores, and he ended up being again like the leading receiver just by receptions and for this past season. So Logan, he's certainly got a lot of upside potential at the wide receiver position. There's going to be a ton of talent ahead of him, but you never know how these guys develop and break out, and I think he certainly has the upside skill for it. How about you?
Well, I think you guys know where I'm going with this. As the Canadian on the show that has been repping Canadian talent, which comes in year and year now at Notre Dame, we just got a commitment in the 25 class from another Canadian. I got to go with Sean Siviano, defensive lineman. He's going to be a nose tackle, a big boy. Yeah, he was playing in Clearwater, Florida. Not the highest ranked guy, man. But I just think that's a position where you do not have to be highly ranked. It's a position of need, and you're just filling in a nice big chunk of space. And I think that's an area where Notre Dame doesn't have one of those guys. And I think Sean could be that, and I think he's going to have an ability to be a huge part of both the run defense and the pass defense. I think he can get after the quarterback. And we'll see. He's going to have to develop, like you said, with your receiver. But I think he's going to do it. I got a feeling. He's my boy. He just followed us on Twitter, actually. I got a good feeling there. I think he's going to provide so much of what Notre Dame doesn't have. And I think over time, whether that's in year one or if it's in year four, I think we're going to see him dominate the defensive line. And I know he's a guy you like, and I'm really excited to watch how his career progresses at Notre Dame.
Absolutely, yeah. 6'1", 315-pound frame as a true freshman coming in, right? So, or not even as a true freshman yet. Like, he still has to get to camp and then put on some weight and get through the, you know, the fitness program in the offseason in the spring and the summer. So, there's a possibility by the time this guy hits the field that he's like 325, 330. Who was that cat from Georgia that everyone talks about that was just like an absolute animal? Jordan Davis, right? Jordan Davis was a three-star recruit. Sean Civilano, again, maybe he needs to develop a little bit, maybe, you know, get the body, you know, a little bit more weight on the frame, but he's already coming in at 315. So, like you said, plugging holes and really just being hopefully a dominant force on the defensive line. And that's how I see things playing out, you know, going forward. Now, the next conversation that we're going to pivot to, and, you know, thanks everyone for listening along. Make sure you subscribe, rate 5 stars, review, write a mean review if you want to, make fun of my voice and how nerdy I am and how stuffy I am. But we certainly appreciate all the follows and all the interaction and everything. Next topic here, as we're getting through this just before Christmas episode, as we're heading into bowl week, we have the coaching changes. Notably, we had our offensive coordinator leave, and then we brought a new one in. Dylan, I'm going to turn over to you. Give us the details.
Well, do you guys remember how Brian Kelly kind of left Notre Dame for LSU and then said a bunch of shit that wasn't really true, and then LSU fans kind of thought they were better than us for 2 years? Yeah, well, that's over. Notre Dame just pulled Mike Denbrock from Brian Kelly and the LSU Tigers, number one offense in the country, Heisman quarterback in Jaden Daniels, a guy that has succeeded everywhere. He comes to Notre Dame, is the official offensive coordinator in 2014, which in hindsight I've learned from NDFB Analytics was a pretty successful offense in terms of explosion and EPA per play, and then was a big part of the offense in 2015 and 16, whether or not he was officially named offensive coordinator. Went to Cincinnati, immediately saw improvements and continued to improve as Cincinnati went on to a playoff berth, and took over an LSU offense that was abysmal, turned them into a pretty good offense in their first year. I think they averaged over 30 points a game in their first year. And then in their second year, I mean, I don't know if we even need to talk about it anymore. You guys know how good LSU's offense is. So a big hire. He's been at Notre Dame twice. He had stints in the early 2000s, then again with Brian Kelly, having known him at Grand Valley State and having obviously coached with him there. This is huge. This is a guy who gets Notre Dame. He knows Notre Dame. He's apparently a great recruiter, and he understands the Notre Dame message, which is huge. A great, I think, developer of talent. I think he's great to probably be coached by. Great play caller. It's hard to find kind of a negative other than the fact that he's kind of got, I guess, maybe that Kelly stink to him of that era. And, you know, obviously he was kind of I don't want to say he was thrown under the bus, but he was kind of the fall guy for the 2016 abysmal season. Yet somehow Kelly kept his job. So, yeah, I love this. This is great. It's not just a big own to Brian Kelly and a little bit of a FU to the LSU fans who've been, you know, many of them have been fine, but some of them have not been. This is huge. It's Notre Dame's number one target by far. They're apparently going to make him the highest paid coordinator in college football. Steve, you fucking heard me right. What did I just say?
Highest paid OC in CFB. Man, oh man, it feels so good to say that because it feels like we finally got the support from the fucking administration. Thank God, finally. Man. You've been begging for it.
For going from Ludwig debacle to basically outbidding LSU, although A&M had outbid them as well, but just basically putting all the cash on the table saying money's not a problem. That's what I love. That's Notre Dame needs that support. And obviously the NIL game, I think, has taken a big step up, as you could tell by the transfer portal. I'm loving it. It's so huge. What are your thoughts on this hire? Is he your top guy? Were you hesitant a little? What's Steve thinking?
I don't know enough about as many coordinators at the level. I mean, there's some certain names that kind of pop out here and there. Anyone that enters the conversation, I just give them the eyeball test. Right. And if you can take a Jaden Daniels, who was just like a good athlete and you know, semi-polished passer from Arizona State and transplant him to Baton Rouge and make him a Heisman winner despite being on a 9-3 football team, it says a lot, right? So, you know, he's had a good career, and especially something that you'd, you know, in compliment to what you had said, is he also has rapport with Marcus Freeman, right? They were on the Cincinnati campus at the same time. So, you know, they coach together, they have rapport together, and that's certainly probably a part of why he ended up coming back to South Bend, is he probably just knows, like, you know, Marcus has his shit together, effectively, or at least that's what I'm just basically cosplaying and hoping that happened in my mind. So
it's also,
yeah,
it's Notre Dame, right? Like, I'm sorry, but it's just, it is the premier destination
it's
of college
the national
football.
Brand, not a regional brand. Yes,
exactly. And winning a title at Notre Dame would mean more than winning anywhere. It would be earth shattering. You'd be a legend. Everyone on that team who wins the next national championship for Notre Dame will be, their drinks will be paid for at bars for the rest of their lives. That includes the coaches. So
nationwide. Not just in a small college town, whether you're in New York City, Sacramento, California, Tampa, Florida, doesn't matter where you're located, or obviously in the heartland of the country, anywhere you go, because Notre Dame is the biggest deal. We're the big kids on the block. We matter more than anyone else.
I wonder why people hate us. Look, there's some truth to that. You know, the SEC's kind of jokes that, you know, it means more there. And it compared to other conferences, sure. Compared to Notre Dame, absolutely not. Right? There's that famous line from the 1973 Sugar Bowl at Notre Dame: college football is a religion, at Alabama is a way of life. Right? It's different at some of these programs. And LSU, as great as they are, as many championships as they've won in the last 20 years, it's not Notre Dame. It's not Alabama. It's not Oklahoma. It's not USC. It's not Ohio State. It's not Michigan. You know, sorry, but that's kind of just how it is. And I think that's a big factor. I also think Denbrock, yeah, he is closer to home. Yes, he knows, he's familiar with it. Yes, he loves Notre Dame. There's so many factors to that. But don't discount the Notre Dame brand and the Notre Dame mystique. That is a big factor. Marcus Freeman chose Notre Dame too. Just remember that.
Facts, big facts. Yeah, so now he obviously, Denbrock, coming in to take over the offensive side of the football in the wake of, you know, happy trails to Jared Parker. And I know I mentioned it in briefly before. Parker was a good coach, but the inherent issue and the frustration was always that we Notre Dame, if you look up and down this offense and this defense and this team and this roster and this administration and the coaching staff, all top to bottom, everyone is really, really, really good. And again, we got Marcus Freeman a little bit too early in his career, but you'd rather be too early than too late, because Marcus Freeman is a rocket ship going to the moon. So hop on as soon as you possibly can. Well, when said. When it came to Jared Parker inheriting the position effectively after Reese left, I don't not like the guy. Like, he was good, and it, you know, his play calling most of the time was pretty good. There was just, you know,
and he seemed like a good tight ends coach as well. I want to give him props.
He certainly was, absolutely. But again, like, lack of play action, some lack of creativity, and ultimately in the biggest moments, you know, just not having the experience is what led to people having a sour taste in their mouth. So thank you for your service and your time, you know, here, and all the best of luck truly down at Troy. I genuinely hope that he's, you know, competing for, you know, Sun Belt Conference titles shortly, and maybe even a backdoor his team into the playoffs. That'd be cool. That'd be fun. But at the end of the day, it's Notre Dame. You need the best coordinators around your young coach. You need guys that are going to recruit their asses off. You need guys that have been there, that have done that, that have proven it, and that are going to demand top dollar. And right now, that's Al Golden. And right now, that's Mike Denbrock. And let's go. We have the infrastructure in place. It's all systems go. We are going to the moon with this coaching staff.
Well, that's what's so key about it is the experience part. I love that Freeman, a young coach, has surrounded himself with two veteran coaches, right? Al Golden has been head coach everywhere, like at Miami, Temple. He's been coordinators everywhere. He's been in the NFL, right? Mike Denbrock has been around. He's been a coordinator for a while. You're not getting inexperienced to go with inexperienced like we did recently, right? Reese was inexperienced with Freeman. Parker was inexperienced with Freeman. You're adding more veteran guys to that group. So I'm really for it. Also, Mike Brown, wide receivers yes. coach from Wisconsin, was added to the group for a departing Chancey Stuckey, who was let go due to developmental reasons and some other alleged reasons that I don't want to speculate on. So you bring in Mike Brown from Wisconsin, who also coached at Cincinnati. I don't have a problem with Freeman hiring guys he knows, for one. Two, from what everyone has said, he is a super well-respected coach within the industry. He is a teacher first and foremost and a great recruiter, and I think that's what we need at Notre Dame. We need someone who can develop these guys. So I'm thrilled with it. I love this coaching staff. I think it's the best coaching staff in a generation. Like, since probably an old Lou Holtz coaching staff. Like, this is top to bottom. If they stay together, of course, we still got a bowl season to survive. But if they stay together, man, 24 is going to be special.
And 25 and 26 and 27 and 28. The future is bright, man. I'm so excited. Speaking of the future.
If I just have one concern about Denbrock, because you were talking about Parker and play action. Well, Denbrock's not known for play action. So I just want to give you and everyone else a heads up. Maybe we don't see a ton of that, but as long as he's getting results, I'm good with it. And he seems to be a guy who adjusts his offense to the personnel he has, which is huge, because then you can use play action more and just find ways to get your studs the ball. But yeah, that's my last thought there. I love the hire overall. Loving everything about this offseason.
Listen, just give me a quarterback with 4,000 all-purpose yards and 40 touchdowns, and I don't care how much play action you run, but just make it work by any means necessary. And if you don't, I'm going to Control-Alt-Delete myself. But we're going to focus on the future of the coaching staff, which is bright as hell. Speaking of the future of the ACC is getting a little bit more interesting day by day. Now, I'm on the outside looking in, and I certainly don't have nearly as many details as you. Dylan, you have just this special ability to see this sort of stuff, and I think this is complementary to like your lawyer experience and skills and kind of just tracking all this sort of stuff. So what is going on with Florida State and the Seminoles and the ACC conference?
I appreciate that, Steve. I think it's just become a special interest of mine, but I definitely appreciate the compliment there. FSU has been unhappy for a while because, as people may know, the SEC and the Big Ten have recently reached new TV right agreements with respectively ESPN for SEC and then Fox, NBC, and CBS for the Big Ten. And these teams will be making significantly more money than the rest of college football, which makes it hard to compete on a resource level. FSU, believing they are one of the top premier brands, which I don't disagree with, believe that they need to be compensated as such. Clemson agrees, as does, they call it the Magnificent Seven in the SEC, which was seven teams, the two Virginia schools, the two North Carolina schools, Florida State, Miami, and Clemson. They believe they pushed for an unequal revenue distribution, particularly with the post-bowl income that the ACC receives, to try to make up the gap. Well, that gap will never be made up. FSU was then denied a playoff berth, as we will get to, and that served as useful momentum for them because they've been studying the legal ramifications of the grant of rights and how to get out of it for a while, and that has accumulated in a lawsuit that dropped yesterday. FSU is suing the ACC, basically for a breach of contract and saying that they are withholding or they're preventing competition. I haven't really looked through it. I don't particularly think it's strong. What I think they're trying to do is get the ACC to the table to negotiate an exit. So the ACC's position is that their grant of rights is solid and they'll be going nowhere. So Florida State is looking to move from the ACC. That is the short of it. They're going to fight it legally first. Basically, the ACC has said, if you want out, it's going to cost you $572 million. Plus the exit fee of the conference, which is another $120 million. So Good luck with that, Florida State. But what it does mean is that the ACC is in a bit of danger here. Because if Florida State leaves, it could be create a path for Clemson to leave and North Carolina to leave and Virginia to leave. And there could be some issues there. From Notre Dame's perspective, well, it's the same thing as always, right? It's that picture we keep posting of the young Catholic priest laying, sunbathing, smoking a cigarette, not giving a fuck. That's kind of Notre Dame's spot. We're fine. We got our deal with NBC. Now, obviously, the ACC is important for us because that's where our other sports play, and that's where we make up the revenue gap with the Big Ten. The NBC covers most of it, and then we get money from the ACC. So if the ACC implodes, that would be we'd have to find somewhere to go. Or if the ACC loses its best values, then we might have to reconsider our position. So I'm not really sure what Notre Dame's looking at. I don't think they're going to just join a conference because of this. I think Notre Dame might take a bigger leadership role in the ACC. I could see Notre Dame maybe trying to do this kind of deal with another conference. But for right now, I think it's just kind of sitting back and watching. But the ACC is going through a battle here, and it's unfortunate. It's just they were locked into a grant of rights until 2036, and that basically means you don't get to re-up your value to market value, right? You don't get to those payouts that the Big Ten and the SEC got. Even though the ACC would be close to it, I think fair market value would be close to those schools. So that basically has put us all in a pretty shitty media rights deal, and that's why Florida State wants out. We'll see where it goes, Steve. I know that's a lot of businessy legal stuff I've threw at you guys there, but the ACC is a little shaky. We'll see how it goes, but it's important for Notre Dame to be on top of it, and I have no doubt that Jack Swarbrick and Pete Bavakwa, the incoming athletic director, are well aware of what's going on, and NBC gave us a big contract. NBC would know, because Jack knew this was coming. Everybody could see this coming if you're following it. So NBC kind of knew this, so I think there's definitely backup plans in place for Notre Dame. We're probably good for now, but I think it's something maybe our listeners and other Notre Dame fans should start paying just a little more attention to, because it will impact us and it will impact the future of college football. One last thing on this. The NCAA has also proposed, Charlie Baker, the president, a new subdivision of college football that is opt-in, and that would see NIL be the main direct source of income for athletes from the universities, not from their funds, from the universities, as well as a trust fund to set up and to ensure certain protections for Title IX. So NCAA is even looking at moving things now in response to lawsuits about antitrust violations and just general being shitty towards athletes. So we're heading towards a lot, Steve. There's a lot going on. College football is changing. The ACC is changing. And I think it's good just to touch base briefly with everybody. I might be speaking about this more on Big 12 Mafia like I had done in August, September. So just stay tuned for that if you're interested. But yeah, Notre Dame's position is, I think, secured for now.
No notes. Perfect. I'll just let that simmer in everyone's brain exactly as you said. I have nothing else to add, which is perfect. So now just to close out the episode, thank you everyone for joining us for the full hour. It's bowl season and it's college football playoff season. And we're going to get to the Notre Dame bowl game against Oregon State and, you know, how that's going to play out. But I think just kind of a quick, you know, speaking of Florida State and how this kind of ties into everything, you know, they obviously are the playoff snub story, despite going 13-0 with the conference title. Jordan Travis getting injured and going down, I think, obviously is basically the reason that they said no to them effectively. But this is exactly why the playoffs needed to expand, because picking four teams was just, it was always not nearly enough. Bowl games and anything outside of Notre Dame and or the big college football playoffs that you'd be eyeing is the first question. And then secondly, let's hear your thoughts on the final four that were chosen and the way that the CFP process played out.
Sorry, can you repeat the first question again?
Yeah, other than Notre Dame or the college football playoff, are there any other bowl games on the docket that you're going to be looking to just check out?
Yeah, Florida State, Georgia, for sure. I think that's going to be I'm curious how Florida State comes out to that after the snub, and I'm curious how much Georgia is going to give a shit now that it's not a playoff game. So that'll be a good one. Two big brands, two great teams. That'll be, I think, a banging bowl game. But other than that, you know, bowl season is something I just more throw on the TV when there's nothing else on. The playoff is kind of where I look. So is there anything you're looking for in particular, Steve?
Yeah, that's a great question. Let me peruse really quick, but it, just in regards to that game that you just mentioned, the Georgia versus FSU, I'm really curious to see how Florida State's defense, which is phenomenal, is going to play, is going to show up against, against that Georgia offense. That's going to be interesting. I think Georgia's defense is obviously just going to, it's going to be like a snuff film, effectively, with the third string quarterback for Florida State. That's just going to be tough to watch. But yeah, something that I am curious to see, randomly, is the Liberty Flame against the Oregon Ducks in the Fiesta Bowl. Liberty got in. Are they undefeated? They're ranked number 23, and they're kind of a mid-major. They're either 11-1 or they went 12-0 and then won their conference. So obviously to get into the Fiesta Bowl, despite being the number 23 team. So, you know, I obviously expect Oregon to win, but Liberty has had a program that's been on the ascendancy in the mid major world over the last couple of years. So, I don't like Penn State and I don't like Ole Miss. So screw both of them. And I don't want to watch that. I want to see Ohio State explode. Effectively, so screw them and Missouri. So yeah, those cover the New York Six bowl games. I have no interest in the other two, but the Liberty Flame versus Oregon is the only other one that I'd like to see.
Yeah, those are some good games. I would expect Oregon to win. Man, I could see Missouri pulling off the upset with everything Ohio State has lost, including Kyle McCord. In fact, I might even predict that. But Ohio State, I think, is a better team. And then, yeah, I think FSU is going to keep it real close with Georgia, but I would expect Georgia to kind of win a close one in a Big Ten looking scoreline. But yeah, those are great. The playoff obviously is going to be number one. I never want to say it against number four Alabama. That's got to be absolute cancer for us to watch. I'm going to say Alabama rolls. I hate them. I hate Michigan.
Please, God.
I know. I can't even believe I'm cheering for Alabama, but. Yeah, that'll be the at least one of them will be out. That's one takeaway. And then the other one is Texas against Washington. And I'm a huge Husky guy now. I really like Michael Penix. They beat Oregon when nobody thought they would again. And I respect that. They got a great defense, great offense. I'm going to take Washington to beat Texas. And I suspect you're going to take Texas. Am I right there?
Yeah, I think Texas is going to win, but I'm going to be, I'll join you with heavy rooting for Washington. I want Washington to win the whole thing.
Yeah, and I think they can. Like, that's what's crazy is I think, Texas beat Alabama. So if Washington, and not to do transitive property here, but if Washington beats Texas, they can surely at least compete and beat Alabama. And I don't think Michigan, I think Michigan would be competitive with Washington and Texas for sure. I don't know how those games would go, but I'm just going to count on Alabama to do us all a favor there.
I'm rooting for three teams in the playoffs, just whichever one would prevent the most catastrophic outcome.
Yeah, right. As long as the winner of Alabama Michigan doesn't win the championship, you know what I mean? Whoever Texas and Washington just join forces, unite, form a super team and just win the championship yourself, you know?
Agreed. Now, so those are the obviously the big four, and we've stated our given allegiances. I think ultimately the right decision was made.
I was going to ask you about that. You would put Alabama in over FSU.
Yeah, just because I mean you look at the college football playoff games over the last couple of years, and the first round of those, and again including Notre Dame, which has been on the bad side of this, they haven't been close and they haven't really been good games. Now I'll argue until I'm blue in the face that the games that Notre Dame lost, they were significantly closer than what they looked like. we just ultimately couldn't execute in the biggest moments and get into the end zone in certain circumstances, but we played so much better than what those scores looked like. Regardless of that, a lot of the games have been blowouts. Do you really expect a second or third string quarterback for Florida State to even remotely compete in the playoffs.
Who would the opponent be? Right, it'd be Michigan.
Yeah,
I could see that being competitive.
That's true, because that at that point it would effectively turn into the Michigan versus Penn State game, which was an absolute abomination of football to watch. Yeah, I wasted the fucking afternoon of my life watching that, hoping that Penn State would win. And Drew Aller, 5-star recruit, sucks.
Yeah. Well, if it's a race to 10 points, right, that's just my only thinking, is maybe Florida State could pull that off. But I'm with you, though. Like, I don't know if I have a position. I would maybe lean towards just giving FSU the benefit of the doubt, because they did go, like, if a 13-0 conference champion doesn't get in, like, what are we doing? You know, like, there's that part of me that's just like, for the sake of this.
I agree with that in principle, but when you take it out Jordan Travis and even your second stringer is like going through concussion issues and is doubtful, and then you're going down to the third string, it's just like,
yeah, you're spot on. I think it's in principle versus practicality. So I don't think it was a conspiracy. I don't think they just saw Alabama's a bigger brand, because yeah, they are, but FSU's not a slouch. They're a huge brand too. I don't think it was ESPN picking the SEC over the ACC. I don't really believe that. I think just it was the quarterback. It was the quarterback issue. So it's a tough one. It'll go down. It'll be a debate forever. I mean, I find it hilarious that FSU fans will claim about, well, games matter, don't they? And it's like, well, okay, then Notre Dame's the 1993 national champion, right? So
correct.
You know, I mean, we poked a little fun about that, but I feel for FSU. I'd be fucking annoyed too, man. I'd be livid if Notre Dame was in that position. So I don't blame them. I will refuse to pretend that this lawsuit is about that, though. Like, that's that they've been planning this for a while, but I definitely feel for them. But you know, it is what it is. They better luck next year. You know, they should be competing for a playoff spot anyway, and we'll get to host them in November. It's a game I want to go to.
True. Yep. I endorse and support everything you just said there. Well, that's going to bring us to the final here. We're closing up shop. It is currently Saturday, so we have 6 days until Saturday at the recording, Sunday, and when you guys are listening to this. It's Notre Dame in the Tony the Tiger Sun Bowl out in Arizona against – or no, I'm sorry, in Texas, right?
El Paso.
El Paso, Texas, against the 8-4, 19th ranked Oregon State Beavers. Notably, starting quarterback DJ Uiagalelei has transferred. Backup quarterback, who is extremely talented, Aiden Chiles. I think I said that right. Don't care. He is also transferred over to Michigan State. So, yeah, Oregon State is now down to their third-string quarterback. Notre Dame is even
more they're even more beat up than we are. Like, they've lost a lot.
Exactly. And and they are Notre Dame is 6.5-point favorites as of this moment in time. And I see I think the line is set at 41.5 points for what it's worth. So, Dylan, the bowl game, the Tony the Tiger Sun Bowl. What are your thoughts?
It's hard to predict, man. We don't even know. Like, half of our team is new for both of us. Look, I expect Notre Dame's superior talent to win out the day, right? I think the offensive line, the running backs, Steve Angeli can manage the game. They should be fine. Defensively, they didn't really lose much defensively. So, again, they should be fine. Oregon State has lost a lot, and I feel really bad for them. They've had a rough year, obviously, with the Pac-12 just disintegrating, and then... of course, their head coach leaving them. So I like the Beavs. If you're a Beaver fan listening to this, thank you for listening this far. I'm sorry we made you wait until now to hear anything about you. I expect Notre Dame to win, respectfully. I won't be heartbroken if we don't. It's the Sun Bowl, but it's really an opportunity for us to win a big game. Well, you know, it's a ranked game. It's under national television, you know, and head into 2024 with the right momentum. So I would expect us to win and cover, but anything can happen in these games. I just hope we see a lot of classic improvement in bowl games. You always see a breakout star, I find, with Mitchell Evans being the one last year. I kind of looking forward to that aspect of the game, seeing who breaks out a bit. And Charles Jagasaw, starting left tackle. Absolutely love it.
Yeah, Exactly. And then it's just going to be, you know, the running back by committee with Jeremiah Love, Jadarian Price and Jabron Payne. But this is the J Love show. This is his coming out party. I am predicting 150 yards and 2 touchdowns for Jeremiah Love. I'm manifesting that because that kid is dynamite. He is literally our Reggie Bush. Mark that down. Write that down. He is going to be elite. Really excited for him. And now Jaden Greathouse, he's going to be presumably completely healthy and you know, kind of really elevated now that all the transfers have happened. Also would love to see him just ball out. Now we know that he's extremely talented and he's showed up really well all season. But yeah, I want to see both Greathouse and Love just absolutely ball out. Those are my two picks. Of guys that we, like you said, it's all about development at this point for the future. So let's see those two true freshmen really put on a show. Yeah, I expect them to win. I expect them to cover. I hope that they do. I really hope they don't take a shit in this game like they've been prone to do in the past. But hey, it's not a New Year's Six bowl game, so we should win it. So yeah, I mean, it'd be nice to see Steve Angeli play really well. But more than anything, just seeing that 10 in the win column for Marcus Freeman in year two.
That's huge.
That's huge. It's all momentum from there. And that's the also, thing. Yes.
Sorry, no, I'll let you finish the thought. Mine's a little off topic.
No, that's fine. I was just going to say, speaking of momentum, that's kind of the biggest thing. That's the real reason why this bowl game matters, because you got these guys, you know, if they win this, then coaches can, you know, focus on building out a game plan for the spring and getting these guys excited to be on campus, lift some weights, get themselves in good shape and just kind of springboard the next season. It just feels like a good start to the next season anytime you win your bowl game. So, yeah, I mean, that's my closing thoughts on it, but over to you.
Well, I was just going to say we're 0-2 against Oregon State in our history. That is ridiculous. Like, outrageous. Notre Dame, as a history guy who romanticizes all that, I think I love the idea of having few to nobody with the winning record over us. It is a very exclusive club. Oregon State, respectfully, does not belong in that club. Nobody does. Nobody belongs in that club, really. So we got to turn that around, and you can only win one game at a time, but we got to start with it at the Sun Bowl. We need that winning record back. 0-2 can't happen. 0-3 definitely can't happen. I've got a score prediction. Do you?
I'll let you start.
Okay. I've written this down, so we'll see if the Steve Dillon magic happens again. I've got this one, Notre Dame 31, Oregon State 13.
31-20.
Unbelievable.
I don't think that we're going to be giving up 20 points, but I just see something going catastrophically wrong, like a pick six or something. So
sure.
I was literally going to say 31, like 17 or something, but yeah. Well, once again, we're right in the same neighborhood.
I love it. I think our defense should really carry the game, because they're pretty healthy and they're pretty much the same unit coming back. So I think that'll be the strength, but we'll see. I mean, I'm looking forward to it. I think it'll be a good game. I always love watching Notre Dame football. Bowls aren't meaningless to me. I like to watch them. So we'll see. And 2024 will be the year that Notre Dame takes a huge step forward. And remember, third year is iconic in Notre Dame history. I believe Leahy won his first national championship in year three. Parsegian, yep, won his first national championship in year three. Dan Devine, yep, won his first national championship in year three. Lou Holtz, yep, won his first national championship in year three. I believe even Newt, yep, Rockne had like an undefeated season in his third year. And by the way, Brian Kelly, BCS national championship game, year three. Marcus Freeman, year three. It's going to be special. I can't wait for it. And I can't wait for all of you guys to be there with us. Go Irish.
Year three loading. Go Irish.